Coming to you live from the World Sausage Belching Championships. I'm Tom Rich, and with me as always is more particulate matter than I'm entirely comfortable with. And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 294,628.3, Whence Comes the Dickleberry?
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast, the first podcast on the internet to be broadcast entirely in semaphore, starting now.
Terribly sorry. Forgot to turn the subtitles on there. I'm Tom Rich.
And I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And we're very glad to have you on this first ever All Semaphore podcast, which for the blind among you, we are presenting with subtitles. Audio subtitles.
For everyone, there's no video feed for this podcast.
There's not?
Nope. I hope not. I would need to put pants on. We would need to put pants, different pants, probably.
Separate pairs of pants. Yeah. It's not like we get one weird four-legged pair of pants.
That seems selfish. You could have one pant and I could have one pant. There's only two of us.
Isn't one pant just a dress? Isn't that what that is?
I don't know. Maybe it's just the front half of a pair of pants.
So your rump would get cold. You know what? You don't want to chill your buns.
You got to be sitting on a cushy chair all the time then. Shouldn't get cold with all that warmth and all that, you know, absorbent material to trap the heat and other things.
You'll want to put a towel down, though, because people don't appreciate if you sit bare-assed on their chair.
That's true.
You might find that you would become embarrassed. You started to get angry, but I finished the joke anyway.
You're the worst.
I know. But we're glad to have you here, listening to and maybe watching the podcast. If you're watching, I'm sorry for what I'm doing right now. I know it's disgusting, but there's no known technology to prevent it.
And how did you get cameras in my house?
Oh, I put those there.
Oh, for other people to watch?
Yeah.
Creepy.
And not as lucrative as you might think.
You know, if you start talking while your head is like far away from the microphone, It doesn't actually pick up all that well.
Oh. Is that how microphones work?
It's part of the theory.
So, like, if
involved.
I do this move, It's not picking up as well now?
Correct.
And so they're probably not hearing part of what I'm saying?
Right.
Okay, cool. Good to know. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Glad we had this talk.
Yeah, me too. You're an idiot.
You're an idiot. No, it's probably me. All right, so let's do it. Let's do this episode, see what we've got going on here on the show that you're experiencing right now. What do we got for them tonight? Johannes, what's the thing?
The thing.
What's the happy haps?
The happity haps.
What is the hippity hoppity happity haps?
That's a different podcast.
Oh.
Hosted by Snoop Dogg.
I do love Snoop Dogg's podcasts.
Does he actually have one?
Probably. He's got one. It's about his love for porcelain figurines.
Please tell me that's true.
I want it to be true. I would listen to a podcast where it's just Snoop Dogg talking about his porcelain figurine collection.
Just earnestly discussing his love of porcelain figurines with other avid porcelain figurine collectors.
Yeah, and like they're going through his stuff and he's like, and this is my little porcelain unicorn and here's a little bear and this is a little chubby guy. It'd be great.
I would listen to at least an episode.
And then they go to the other guy's collection and they'd talk about those and they'd talk about different porcelain figurine manufacturers and...
Probably be the first time in history that anyone referred to a porcelain figurine as dope.
Yeah, that's true.
I believe our intended plan for this first segment, though, is another segment of... This says cream balling. That's disgusting. I don't know what that is, and I don't want to. I believe it's supposed to say theme balling.
Isn't that a Tom Petty song? Because I'm theme.
You did this last time. You do this every time.
Theme ballin'. Like that. Yeah, that's that song that Tom Petty did with his band, the Tom Petty Five.
I think you mean the legendary Tom Petty Five, because he's an like Bruce Springsteen.
I like to think that the Tom Petty Five are... It's referring to his hand, because he doesn't have a band. It's just him by himself.
Just one hand, though?
He lost the other one.
In Nam?
No, in a tragic sausage-making accident. It's very sad. That's why all of the songs are like that, the way that they are. Because of the hand thing.
Right, yeah. Right.
So Theme Ballin' is a segment we haven't done in a while. So for those new to this segment, each of us comes up with a theme for a board game and balls it at the other person. Balling it being... rolling it up like a basketball, taking it to the key on the hoop side, and giving the tomahawk slam from downtown. And then the other guy...
I'm sorry. I just... rolling it up like a basketball. I want you to describe for me what it is you think a basketball is, how one acquires it, and apparently rolls it up before... play.
Well, I mean, they bring it out in a cart.
Not a basket.
All of the basketballs. No, the basket is what you put it in during the game.
Okay, just checking.
They bring them out in the cart, and then each player gets one off of the cart and lays it out and smooths it real good.
Right, but what is it at this point?
Well, it's a basketball. Yeah, it just hasn't been rolled up. You
got
to roll it.
So it's made of what?
I think it's mostly hemp.
Okay.
And also gravel. But then anyway, you each get
like
one.
Like the dirt?
Yeah, exactly. And then you smooth it out real good to make sure there's no wrinkles and that you get any static electricity out. And then you roll it into the actual basketball shape.
Which is?
I think it's mostly carob.
That's not a shape.
And then you do your warm-ups. You know, the team warms up on the court, such as one does, and then you play the game of basketball.
Okay. That all sounds right.
Is that not how basketball works?
No, I think that's... From what I remember from my report on basketball in mm-hmm. the 8th grade, all of that is right.
All I remember from my report on basketball in the 8th grade is that James Naismith invented it in Massachusetts.
That's wrong.
It's wrong. Who invented basketball?
It's Ernestine Kleinfelter. She invented it for her ladies' reading group mm-hmm. When the library burned down in their town so they couldn't read anymore. In the early 1600s uh-huh. in, I think, what is now Finland.
Oh, I did not know that.
It may or may not have also been Finland then.
It's unclear.
But there's no way to find
there's
out.
There's no known technology to discern that. No. Was the basketball ring originally the same size as it is now, or has it adjusted over time? Do you remember? Do you know anything about that?
I don't know what size it is now. So
I think it's 3 at this point.
Well, it was 3 then, but I don't know if there's been a change in the unit of measurement.
Right, right.
Coming overseas and over time.
Or, yeah, or if 3 has become more standardized now,
yeah.
perhaps, than it was at the time in what may or may not have been Finland.
At the time.
Back in then.
Yeah.
The then times.
Right.
When this all happened, when basketball was invented.
But we're not talking about basketball.
We're talking about theme balling.
Which is similar but different.
Similar in that there is a ball. Different in that it's a segment on a podcast as opposed to a sport.
Right.
Okay, all on the same page. Good, very good.
Both created, though, by Ernestine Kleinfelter in
yes.
the 1600s.
Well, yes, very, very prolific Finnish woman.
A podcaster.
Podcaster.
Yep.
Baller,
right.
in fact.
The ballest.
You might even say the baldest, because she had no hair.
It's true.
Her head gleamed, and that was the inspiration for the shape of the basketball. Her bald
right,
dome.
Yeah. Sort of head-shaped.
Yeah, it's vaguely like a head,
yep.
except spherical.
Yep.
So Theme Ballin' is a segment. I think I already said this part, but
yes,
whatever.
You did.
Okay. So do you want to go first or do you want me to?
You said you would.
Okay. So my theme for you to ball upon is...
I thought you balled the theme.
No. Well,
You ball it to me.
I ball the theme, but then you have to ball the theme once it's been balled to you.
That doesn't make any sense.
Am
I allowed to dribble? Am I required to dribble?
Yeah, you have to dribble, but you can't double dribble. You can only single dribble.
Okay.
And you can't travel. You have to stay where you are.
Well, yeah, the mic is like, it's not going to move with me.
Yeah, exactly. But you are encouraged.
That rule doesn't need stating. We should talk. Never mind. She's probably long since passed. I was going to say we should talk to whoever created the rules for this game.
No, but people who play basketball are immortal.
Wow.
They never die.
Why don't more people get into that?
Because it's kind of lame.
Fair enough.
But
ball me a theme already. Jeez.
By the theme I am balling to you and that you will then ball yourself.
Okay.
Is liquor.
Oh.
I know you just got real excited, didn't you? So liquor is the theme of the game. So I'm not actually going to do anything. Because anything I do would probably be more annoying than...
Well, the real temptation here is to make a very expensive, probably one-off game that requires actual liquor and maybe includes that liquor, but...
You just want to sell bottles of premium single malt
whiskey.
Well,
here's the thing, right? Like, so there's really no restraints on what we can do with these themes. So I could create a drinking game.
Sure, yeah.
Which feels like cheating, but at the same time...
It's a game.
Why not? It's a game. Yeah. Well, is it, though? Really? Is a drinking game a game? I feel like a drinking game's not really a game in the same way that Exploding Kittens isn't really a game because
it's
Russian Roulette's not really a game. It's just a thing. Well,
yeah.
No, not necessarily that, but it's not really, like, you can't win?
Well, I mean, if Russian Roulette, you win if you don't get shot in the head.
You don't, it's more that you don't lose than that you win.
So, with a drinking game, you win in that you wind up drunk.
I guess.
If that's your goal.
Anyway, game could use some definitions. I'm probably not going to do the drinking game thing. It seems too easy.
Sure.
So, liquor. Liquor is my theme.
I can narrow it for you if you want, but...
If you want. I think I have an idea. No, if you're excited for your narrowing criteria...
No, you just looked pensive in your thought process, so I thought you might be stuck on it. But go ahead.
I'm trying to figure out how to do it. So, my very basic thought at this point is a game where... You become progressively drunker over the course of the game, and that will, or at least you might, and that will affect perhaps your ability to actually complete the tasks or to move about the board.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know yet, which is why I was looking pensive, like why you would be moving about the board or how, like what's your reasoning there, and how to track drunkenness.
Check it.
Okay.
What if there were a significant reading element to the game, so you get directions on cards or something?
Uh-huh.
But as you get drunker, you progressively get more and more distorting lenses through which you have to read them. So you have to, like, slide the card into a thing.
And, yeah, with, like, different colored filters something.
Yeah, and filters make it harder and harder to read the stuff, and that makes it harder and harder for you to do it because you can't read it very well.
I like that because rather than saying your character is more drunk, just behave that way or be handicapped in some way to try to approximate that, it actually makes the player themselves less able to complete their task.
Or if it had a dexterity element, you could just allow them to use less and less of their hand. It's like when you're fully sober, you can use your whole hand to roll a die. But when you're completely trashed, you have to roll the entire die from picking it up to everything using just your thumb.
Ooh.
And you're not allowed to pin it against the rest of your hand.
Not
work.
Yeah, I like it.
I mean, the real basic theme would be just a pub crawl and just be the last man standing on a pub crawl. But there's a lot of other ways to go with it.
All right. You have to pick up a girl at a bar or a boy, whatever. You have to pick up a person of the gender of your choice at a bar. I'm going to stick with your filters idea on the cards. So you've got, I think the simplest way to do it probably be to have the text written in several different colors. And as you go on, you add more and more. So you might start with a red filter that removes all the red words. And then filter that reforms. You know, you can't do that too many times because at some point you just won't be able to see through the layers of filter.
Uh-huh.
Though at the same time, that might be fun. It's just like, well, you got blackout drunk, so you can't read the card. Good luck.
Now you're just randomly hoping you do the thing that needs to be done.
And I guess this doesn't sound super fun. I like it mechanically as a start to something. I don't think as it stands in my mind, it's super fun, but maybe you have basically a script that you have to complete the script on both sides to, you know, successfully end in getting this person's number. And so if you're completely sober, you have to, you could both just read your scripts and get to the end. But if you're blackout drunk, you have to make guesses at where the where the lines go. And so you probably don't have identical scripts. You probably have to have a way for it's like they know what their response needs to be based on what you said. And so if you only have like half the words in your line, they're going to have to guess like, well, how do I respond to this? Mm-hmm. And then vice versa. And so you may end up doing almost kind of like a choose your own adventure thing through these cards or whatever. And you might end up thinking you've done really well guessing it, what the correct response to their drunken slurred nonsense was, ending up with like starting a fight with someone or they have a boyfriend or whatever. Not wildly entertaining as it stands, but I think the mechanic could go somewhere interesting.
Yeah. I really like the mechanic with the lenses and how you can progressively see less and less of the directions you're getting from the cards.
Yeah, there's not a real great reason for you to be getting drunk in the first place.
No, but I mean, everybody...
You'd have to have some kind of meter that's like, you can't go approach... You know, you have like a courage meter.
Sure.
And your liquid courage, you have to get it up to a point, but you have to sustain it. But then you're also like buying drinks and maybe being bought drinks. Uh-huh. And so you don't have a ton of control. I guess in this scenario, your character that you're controlling in the game is incapable of not drinking things that are put in front of them.
Yeah.
And so you may uncontrollably spiral toward blackout drunkenness just because...
You should also have a Balmer peak in the middle of your drunkenness gauge.
Instant clarity.
Yeah, where if you hit it exactly, you get to remove all the filters.
For one turn.
And you're like, I just can see perfectly what I have to do here. And then the next turn, you're completely hosed and you can't even call an Uber properly.
Oh, man. That adds a terrifying level of complexity to the game. Like, you have to not only successfully, like, get a girl's number or get her to come home with you, but then you also have to navigate hiring a taxi, or maybe, you know, if you're too drunk, you just have to flip a coin to see like
where do you wind up at the end of
are we going to try to drive home ourselves, or are we taking public transport?
Do we choose to walk and run the risk of public urination along the way, or what?
We should design this game and pitch it to Mothers Against Drunk Driving as like a simulator for
I think we'd have a better time, better odds pitching it to bars.
Yeah.
People would have fun with that. That's actually a really fun idea.
It's a start for something.
Yeah, there's something there, I think. It's not something we can get probably put together for Protospiel fast enough this year, but something we want to play with.
We'll call it Drinky Drunky Tom, which I think was one of the hobo names, actually.
For those of you deeply confused by whatever the hell he just said, Johannes and his friends once did a list of how many hundred hobo names?
Oh, no. John Hodgman of occasionally The Daily Show and the Judge John Hodgman podcast and a couple episodes of Battlestar Galactica and a bunch of other stuff.
Wait,
he was the brain surgeon on Battlestar.
I have no memory of seeing John Hodgman on Battlestar Galactica.
He didn't have the mustache or the glasses at the time.
Oh.
But yeah, he was like such a Battlestar nerd and already kind of like on the way up as a comedian that through something, I don't know, talking about it on The Daily Show or because he was a Daily Show correspondent, he was asked to guest star on the show.
That's funny. I didn't know that.
Yeah. But at any rate, he did the hobo names. It's part of one of his books and he released a recording of it, of him reading 700 hobo names. While Jonathan Coulton played Big Rock Candy Mountain in the background on guitar, all in one ridiculously long single take.
That is a long take.
Which is a lot of guitar playing and a lot of reading of hobo names. And that was wildly entertaining. And then inspired by that, some friends and I made a list of 700 stripper names.
Oh, that's right.
Which is much filthier and is still available at, I believe, 700strippernames.blogspot.com. I'm going to double check that and also post it in the show notes if I remember. Definitely. Yes, 700 stripper names still exists.
Fantastic.
Barnyard Benji, the cattle kisser. Gross.
That's special. Your misspent youth.
Yeah, some of these are really bad. Tim the Toolbag Taylor. Maybe I shouldn't have put this on the internet for other people to find elsewhere on the internet. But, well, there you have it. So, I guess it's time for me to pitch a theme to you, yes?
Ball a theme.
Sure. Why not?
I'm ready, coach. I got hoop dreams.
Do you? No.
I'm very short.
All right. Homeownership.
You. Fine. Okay. So, the obvious way to go is just like a nonsense Euro-y style manage your home and maintenance and money crap game and be the one with the most outstanding home at the end. Which is, that'd be a fine game, but whatever, nobody wants to play it, right?
Right. I agree, yeah. No, you don't. It's too game of life.
Yeah, exactly. So I think you want to go somewhere goofier with it. Something like, you are white trash that has moved into a nice neighborhood out of spite, and your goal is not to do anything to your house in particular, but to drag down the property values of everybody around you.
All right.
And so you have to take actions to drag down the property values of the people around you without getting actually arrested or having the HOA come after you or anything like that.
So your job is really to maintain the absolute minimum quality of home allowed by the constraints around you.
Exactly.
So this could actually end up being like,
it's like
players guerrilla gardening, like going over and mowing someone else's lawn.
Yeah, precisely. I like it. It's sort of like a reverse blackjack. You want to get as close to zero as you can without going under.
Right.
So yeah, each player is a hillbilly family trying to ruin a nice neighborhood by just being terrible.
That's not where I expected you to go at all, and I really like it.
So, like, you can't put your car up on blocks, but you could just not drive it for a while.
Sounds like you're speaking from life experience.
I couldn't possibly know what you're talking about,
no,
to be honest.
No.
I have, like, 7 cars in my driveway. I'm only supposed to have 2. Fuck them. But I...
So, mechanically, what does this look like?
That's the tricky part, is how you model this stuff. Like, I mean, you could do a real simple, like, action point type thing, but I'm not sure that really gets it. You have to have some way of tracking everything, like your car's status, the level of visual maintenance done on the outside of your house, the length of your lawn and all that. So you're going to need some tracks to do that, or like a deck of cards or something, maybe. But the problem you'll run into is that's a lot. If you've got, say, 4 players each with their own house, that's a lot of bookkeeping to keep track of all those factors for each house.
So you could simplify the tracks a little bit. You could have like a house track, a lawn track, and if you even care, like a driveway track or a car track or something for each player. So that's only 3 to keep track of. And then you could do kind of like what Monopoly and some other games do, where like you go far broader. So maybe you have cards, like event cards that make things happen, that are like either, you know, Habitat for Humanity takes pity on you and fixes up your house while you're on vacation, or like a tornado blows through and tears the roof off your house. You know, he'd go either way.
Sure.
And so you can have events maybe that apply to those tracks. But if you feel like I really have a great event that I want to fit in that wouldn't necessarily just hurt the house but leave the lawn, whatever, who cares, it's a game, we're just gonna put it on the house anyway, even though a tornado would wreck up your lawn just as much as your roof,
right?
We're just gonna say your car survived it somehow, whatever. So you've got a couple tracks, but it's not so like bookkeeping heavy that it bogs you down. And then the game is basically, you might even have like a little neighborhood map, and the game is, there would have to be some like just NPC little mansion things out there.
Right.
For a standard, and then whatever number of players have to split their time between like keeping their house fixed just enough that it doesn't get too dilapidated, but also like running around and like either sabotaging or guerrilla fixing other players' houses.
Right.
I'm sorry, I'm doing all the work for you.
That's
so fine. Please jump in.
I did a lot of work on the liquor one.
You totally did.
So, well, another thing you might do is, because one of the things you would want to balance is, you've only got so much leeway with the HOA before they before they come down on you.
Right.
So, like, you might have a hand of actions cards that you're using to do stuff like mow your lawn or whatever, but you've also got a certain number, I got excuse cards there, like, I haven't mowed my lawn yet because I have diabetes and I haven't been able to get my insulin, so my sugar's been high and it's all terrible. that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And it's a lie, but you can only have so many in front of you before you've overused your excuses. I gotcha. And so you've got to manage how many you've played versus how many you haven't yet, and how much room you need, and how long before they fall off.
Yeah.
And the HOA forgets about them, more or less.
Well, you might also say, like, you can't go, you know, guerrilla gardening in someone else's house unless the player isn't there. So if you have a board that you're physically moving around to some degree, like, you have to be in a location to do something. So you might allow your own house to get far enough over the line that it might be an attraction to another player to leave their place to try to, like, finish you off.
Mm-hmm.
Or you might also be able to, like, pop over to the NPC houses and, I don't know,
raid their refrigerator.
Or even, like, if your end goal is really to lower the housing value, then to maybe wreck them up enough that, like, it doesn't matter that you're not up to the, like, that it brings the entire, like, baseline of what looks nice in the neighborhood down, so that you've lowered the...
I love the idea that there would need to be a card called Release Groundhog. If you have a groundhog token, discard it and place a burrow token on each every lawn adjacent to yours.
Nice.
That fat little bastard. That's actually kind of fun too.
Yeah. It has I like games that take a sort of tongue-in-cheek approach to, like, real-life stuff, like mowing the lawn, or that office game we ended up realizing was pretty much just Dilbert the game.
Yeah.
I find those really wildly entertaining,
mm-hmm.
in concept anyway.
Yeah, we haven't managed to successfully design one, because...
That hasn't been done already.
Right.
That isn't Dilbert.
Well, the other thing is that it turns out a lot of design challenges are very easily solved when you have access to wizards.
Yes, it's true.
Like, it makes a lot of... It's easier to make your mechanics work and make sense thematically if you can just be like, because he's got magic, he's a magician.
It's like in Arkham Horror, that card where it's like, you bump into a man in the street. He is a wizard.
The greatest card in all of Arkham Horror.
The sentence, "he is a wizard," period, exists on this card.
It's great. It's, if you ever play Arkham Horror, hope that you get it, because it's fantastic. I think it's in one of the Dunwich.
No, it's I'm pretty sure it's down on, it's, is over it really? By, like, the church and the, or the, yeah, I think it's by the church.
I thought it was at Wizard's Hill.
No, there's a wizard there too, but that's not the "he is a wizard"
card. It's a different
card.
Wizard.
Yeah.
Okay.
He is a wizard.
He is a wizard.
Well, I guess we did what we could there.
With theme ball, and we talked a lot about basketball.
That's the very real sport of basketball that exists.
It's very real. And the Finns are good at it.
The best.
The best.
Having invented
huge.
It.
Huge.
Actually, is it Finn? No, it's not Finland, is it? Not Sweden or Norway? I don't know. One of them countries over there is statistically, like, the tallest, on average, the tallest country in the world.
Huh.
I don't think it's Finland, though.
I did not know that.
Denmark? I don't know.
I don't know either. It's probably Estonia.
It's definitely not Estonia. Estonia is so tiny that there's a company there that makes pianos that's just called Estonia. And if I remember what the piano store owner guy told me correctly, I think it's owned by, like, I don't know what the government of Estonia is now,
mm-hmm.
but someone who was, maybe still is, like a prince. Like, it is actually, like, a nationally owned company. Like they're pretty good pianos, but mm-hmm. it's, like, a not inconsiderable part of their gross domestic product or whatever.
Or
these
company?
Like, this one company called Estonia that makes pianos.
You know that there's still a guy who is the Prince of Habsburg, like the Habsburg emperors who were in charge of Austria-Hungary.
Wow.
Like, he's just out there right now.
What does he do?
He's a prince.
Now, is this one of the ones where, like, there's nothing for them to do, and they were actually removed from power,
yeah,
like, officially after
and actually, he wasn't allowed back into Austria until he signed and formally renounced all of his claims to any kind of authority there.
Because I heard something on the trivia podcast I listened to, the Good Job Brain podcast, mm-hmm. about the title of prince and of, you know, princess or whatever being valuable despite having no actual meaning anymore, mm-hmm. to the point that people will pay lots and lots of money to be adopted as adults by, because it is still like recognized on some level, this like hereditary title, sure. of queen and king and prince and princess. And so they will pay a lot of money to be adopted, just basically just so they can put prince on their thing. And it's usually like weird, fabulously wealthy people who live bizarre lives and have websites with just pictures of themselves, like swimming with bikini models because they're a prince.
I worked with a person whose first name was Princess once. That's... like literally that was her legal first name.
Wow.
She was a very nice lady.
I feel like would have to be.
Yeah, because if your name is Princess and you're a total B word,
everyone's going to be like, well, excuse me, Princess.
Exactly. Yeah, everybody's going to say that. And then you're going to have
all
a
the
bad
time
life.
Forever. Yeah, it won't be great. Well, if you're a princess, a pretty, pretty princess, you should let us know. On Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
On email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
Or on the website, in the comments, at www.mildlyalarming.com. Or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow.
Or you can just get blasted ass, fall down drunk, and you'll probably find your way somewhere. And when you wake up, it won't matter anymore.
Or you will have died because you found your way into traffic. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsor. You know, growing up makes you start to think about the things that take care and attention in life. Like whittling a canoe out of another bigger canoe. Or shaving your own back. Winemaking is like that. Those old vineyardists have to take special care to be sure that their grapes get a certain number of what they call heat days. Well, we do the same thing here. Tell them about it, Jennifer.
Sure will. You see, the way we figure it, hogs is basically bacon grapes, and if you want to get a proper product out of them, you need a certain number of heat days, too. That's why we 100% guarantee that our hogs have never experienced a day below 90 degrees, from the moment they pop squealing into the world to the moment that Wilson tips a wheelbarrow full of them into the hog press.
After that, there's a few more steps we won't go into, but you can rest assured that we put the same care and attention into each one. So that at the end of the day, we have the perfect, consistent product you all know and love. A fine can of Wilson and Jennifer's All Pork Wine. Just smell that fermented pig. Heat it up on your stove for a real treat on a cold winter night. Or heat it up over a trash can fire under an overpass for an equally real treat before you get snuggly with Beardy Bubba the Dirt Patch King.
Pork wine is best served with pork chops, bacon slats, hollop sauce, souse, or just a big ol' ham hock.
We've got all your types of all pork wine. Sous-vide noir.
Bacon village.
And our top seller, Cabernet Oink. So if you're the type to care about doing things the old-fashioned way, with care and attention and proper know-how, get yourself a can of Wilson and Jennifer's All Pork Wine. You deserve it.
Bye, y'all.
Welcome back to the podcast. My name's Tom Rich.
If you had any sense of anything even vaguely musically related, mm-hmm. I may have joined in to your...
Oh.
I hope you can hear the swoosh of these air quotes, song.
Oh, okay, okay. Show us how it's done. How it's done then, Captain Fancy.
No.
Of the SS Prancy.
No.
Just dance
I might
in
write
here.
A song called Captain Fancy of the SS Prancy, though. It's pretty incredible.
I listened to that song.
Look forward to Captain Fancy of the SS Prancy, the first official song of the Mildly Alarming podcast.
It's going to be our part of our spoken word album.
No, I'm going to sing it. Oh. It's a song, dummy. Oh.
Are those different things?
For most people.
But we're glad to have you here. We're glad you came back after our that brief break from our sponsors. We understand that some people have been concerned about the labor conditions at the factories of some of our sponsors, and we just want to let you know that we don't care.
It's true. We don't.
At all. We're just not even a little concerned. Bit. Not concerned
at
all.
We don't even get to pick the sponsors. It's not like we have any agency in who advertises on our show.
They just give us money.
Upstairs, it just comes down from upstairs. The bosses tell us.
They lower it in a basket.
Yeah.
And we just do it. And it's just fine. It's just fine. And you don't even need to worry.
Like, if we had a little more money for the podcast, we would never even know until the episodes come out, because it would be the producer and the engineer putting it in. I'm both of those things right now. So I find out, but it's not like I find out
ahead of time.
Well, we're talking to you right now.
Yeah, that would be silly.
I don't know. The basket isn't sitting right here next to me.
Mm-hmm. With the lotion in it for the putting on the skin.
The skin.
Or else we might encounter a certain a set of ladies' leg garments for a second time.
Right.
Right. We good? Same page?
Same page.
Okay, so welcome to the second segment. Glad to have you back. I'm Tom Rich. He's Johannes Stauffer. We're the Mildly Alarming Podcast, and we're going to talk about another thing today.
A thing.
A thing. And the second topic for today is casino games.
Casino games?
Casino games. Casino games.
Casino games?
Casino ga...
Casino games.
That's probably not okay.
I don't even know who that would be offensive to.
It sounded like the guy from Iron Chef, Chairman Kaga.
Is he German?
No,
is that why his name is German Kaga?
No, I think he's Canadian.
Did you say Chairman Kaga? Because that's racist.
No, Chairman Kaga.
Wait, is that actually his name?
Yeah, that's what he's called. He's Chairman Kaga. He's the head of Kitchen Stadium.
What?
You never watched the original Japanese Iron Chef?
I didn't have cable.
Oh, fair enough. No, Iron Chef was a show, and Chairman Kaga was the guy in charge of it, and he brought together chefs in his Kitchen Stadium, and he would give them a ingredient at the start of the battle, and the chefs would have to prepare a dish with this ingredient. And then Chairman Kaga and his band of celebrity judges would judge the dishes and declare a winner. And like, well, no, I'm sorry. I've got it wrong. There was a challenger chef that would come every week, and it was some chef, like a chef from out there in the world. And then he had his four iron chefs, and he would make one of, and the challenger would have to pick one of them to challenge.
Uh-huh.
And then they would,
so should
they would
not
battle.
The show have been called either Iron Chefs or Not the Iron Chef?
Sure. But and then there's an American version now, too. But in the original Japanese, the guy in charge was Chairman Kaga. And
okay.
He was like the super flamboyant, like game show hosty type guy.
Uh-huh.
It was pretty fun. It was a goofy show.
Did he wear like suits made out of curtains?
No, he had a cape. And he was very
theatrical. Maybe I'm thinking of Don Cherry.
Might be, yeah.
Is it Don Cherry, the Canadian hockey guy?
I have no idea. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. But anyway, that's Chairman Kaga. That's the reference I was making.
Ah. First, it sounded like you said German, Chairman Kaga. And he's probably a Nazi, because that's what, if you talk in a German accent, people assume.
That's what you're going for, yeah. They and really then, got a bad rap after
and then you
the
said,
whole...
And then I was like, wait, did he actually say Chairman? Like Chairman Mao?
Mm-hmm. No, I was actually referencing
Chinese.
An actual thing, yeah. And Chinese and Japanese people are different from one another.
Did you know that apparently, in much of New England, just a dialectic difference... they tend to say Chinese and Japanese.
Really? No, I didn't know that. So, like, if your brother marries a young lady from Japan and they have a daughter, is that your Japanese?
Only half Japanese. Assuming your brother in this scenario is not also already Japanese.
Which I think is a safe assumption, but not... ironclad. He could be adopted.
And not Iron Chef.
Or not, certainly not Iron Chef.
Probably.
Most likely.
Now there's an American version, so maybe.
Yeah. So like,
or are they like, do they have to be, you know, castrated? I was debating saying it castrated, like a British person.
Sure. I don't know if they castrate the Iron Chefs or not.
Or are they actually iron golems who never could procreate in that way in the first place?
And they just cook.
They just, that's all they do.
They just cook. Kook. 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 Kook.
Now everything sounds like an ethnic slur.
Kook.
I don't know anymore.
Yeah, fair enough. casino games. So casino
Yakko
games.
Yakko Warner makes that noise sometimes. He goes, good night, everybody.
It's a good show.
It is a good show.
That was a good show. Casino games, though. Blackjack, poker, slots, roulette. The thing with the hammer. I don't know any of these kind of
games. There's a thing with a hammer?
Maybe. Maybe I'm thinking of carnival games.
You might be thinking, which are similar, but generally lower stakes.
Sure. All of these sorts of things that you might roll onto over, say, down to Atlantic City or Vegas and play. Or to your friendly local Native American reservation.
So we talked about how if you turn away from the mic, it doesn't work real well. Or if you move your whole head away from the mic, it doesn't work real well. Additionally, if you put something between yourself and the mic, it also doesn't work real well.
What?
This has been a lesson in basic microphone usage.
I don't understand why it wouldn't work if something was between your mouth and the mic. I don't get why that would matter.
I mean, I guess if it's another also plugged in mic, a reasonably skilled engineer could mix it in such a way that you wouldn't notice it floating in between you and the mic you're currently using. But why should they have to do that?
Yeah, but why would that matter?
Also, it was your hand.
Sure, but why would that matter? I'm talking toward the mic.
Right.
I don't understand why my hand being there would make any difference.
Well, that doesn't surprise me at all.
So
casino games.
Casino games, yeah. So we got slots, we got all sorts of stuff. We're kind of wondering about these sorts of games and how they differ from the sorts of games we make, what design choices go into them, what kinds of things happen. And this kind of came to our attention because Johannes has an extreme gambling problem.
I'm super addicted.
And he spent like the last week or so in Canada just on a binge at a bunch of different casinos. I found him face down in a Toronto alley getting the crud kicked out of him from some Quebecois lumberjacks? Quebecers?
Quebecian?
Montrealian.
Quebec?
Nope,
Quebec.
From by Quebeca, who is the queen of Quebec.
Yes, yes.
And
she has a huge beard.
Yes, and she was kicking him in the kidneys and demanding that he pay her back his debts. Yeah. So I bailed him out from the mildly alarming bailout Johannes Fund, brought him back, and now we're talking about casino games on the show. So lucky you.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Still peeing a little blood, but not all blood anymore.
That's better than my pee.
It's mostly pee.
My pee is 100% Kool-Aid.
What flavor?
And 10% carob.
What flavor?
Cherry.
Cherry carob?
Yeah.
Is it called cherub Kool-Aid? It's actually ground up baby angels.
Yeah, they're surprisingly easy to catch.
Get little wings and they're fat.
Yeah, I guess it's not really surprising. You would expect them being angels, though, to have some sort of supernatural defense, but no.
But you'd be wrong.
You would be completely wrong. You can just catch them, chuck them in a meat grinder, and out they come as carob.
Actually, I prefer to use the juice tiger, which you can buy as seen on TV and I think from some tabloids.
Amazing.
It's an actual tiger.
The juice tiger. Are you just feeding baby angels to a tiger in your basement again?
Maybe, because what comes out isn't always juice.
We talked about this. It's illegal to keep a tiger in your basement.
He lives there. He came with the house.
Why did he come with the house?
I'm not keeping him there. If he wanted to leave, he could.
You have a gate.
If he learned how to open doors.
He's a tiger. He doesn't have thumbs.
Tony the Tiger has thumbs.
Yeah, but he's not Tony the Tiger.
His name is Tony, and he's a tiger.
Yeah, but is he the representative for Flosted Flakes?
Flosted Franks?
Yeah, those are...
It's like Jonathan Frakes.
Yeah, and his teeth are very clean.
Yes. But he has lower back problems, which is why he sits in chairs real funny.
Yeah.
You ever seen those?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Commander Riker sits in chairs funny.
Apparently, it's because Jonathan Frakes has back problems.
Oh, is that actually the case?
That's the story.
That
I don't know if it's
know.
True.
I didn't actually know that one.
Yeah. He might just do it because it looks real cool in his mind.
But only if he has a beard.
Right.
Like, the cool factor on Riker drops dramatically if he bothers to
You know,
shave.
The real problem with the beard, though, is how do they distinguish Riker from evil alternate universe Riker?
Well, doesn't evil alternate universe Riker wear a yellow uniform?
I don't actually remember.
I think he does. I think Thomas Riker wears the yellow uniform.
But he has this... Wait, his name is Thomas instead of
William? Yeah, because the real Commander Riker is William Thomas Riker.
Oh.
And Mirror Universe Riker... Or not Mirror Universe, though. transporter accident Riker is right. Thomas see, William see,
that's,
Riker.
But that's different from Mirror Universe Riker.
Sure.
Is there a Mirror Universe Riker?
I don't think there's a Mirror. I don't think they ever went back to the Mirror Universe in Next Generation.
Do you remember, you didn't watch as much DS9 as I did.
Mm-hmm.
But the Mirror Universe, they really stuck hard to the... Though, I don't remember what they did with Ben Sisko, because he already had a goatee. How do you know who the evil one is? If the good one has a goatee, or maybe he's the evil one. But Kira, the, like, security officer...
Did she grow a beard?
Bajoran, like, no, she was, like, kinky, all-leather dominatrix security officer. Like, she was, there's no way she wasn't evil. It was, like, all black leather and maybe a whip. I don't remember. Probably a whip.
Very confusing to a young Johannes.
I was confused. Certainly.
Was that the sort of episode where you're sitting there watching and you're like, I'll bet Dad is going to kick me out of the room in any minute now.
No, I don't think that happened. It certainly happened with things. I don't think it ever happened with Star Trek. I mostly spent most of the time with DS9 being like, boy, I wish I could turn into virtually any shape. Odo, make a better face. He was like, I practice real hard with these weird geometric shapes. And I was like, yes, but like the approximation of a human that you've done is already more complex than those. So maybe practice with human features instead.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he was the security officer. What was...
I think
this Kira, has been the Deep Space Nine. I think she Kira, was the commander.
She was a liaison from the Bajoran military to the station, too.
Additionally, also, too. Also, but I think she was like a lieutenant commander or a commander. Depending on the point in the show.
Yeah.
So, casinos.
Casinos. Which
Quark had on Deep Space
there
Nine.
We go.
Which was originally a Cardassian space station.
You were about to say Cardassian, weren't you?
Actually, I couldn't remember what they were called. And then I was like, wait, there's a name that sounds like what they are. And I sounded it out. Based on Kanye's wife thing.
His spouse entity.
Yes.
Who may be a changeling. We don't really know.
She's the same color as Odo when he's a goop.
There you go. See? We rest our case.
And if you go back, this may be just like an absurdly specific reference. I don't know. Because it's a children's book from when my mom was a kid. And it may even have been old when she was a kid. I don't know. But there were these sort of horrifying, round-headed, not featureless, but not featured enough to be normal humans. Little, like, man-children called the Goops.
Okay.
And they may have been early changelings.
Ooh.
Because they, like, almost looked like people, but not quite.
I gotcha.
And they set examples on, like, how to hold your silverware because they were real bad at it, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
When we were children, if you forgot to, like, put your napkin on your lap at the dinner table, or a number of other things... And someone caught you had to go to the bottom of the basement stairs and yell, I'm a goop and I don't want to be one, and then come back up and sit down and finish your meal. We stopped doing it when it became clear that my parents got caught far more frequently than any of the children without their napkin in their lap.
Well, yeah, they
that was when that ended.
They probably had to figure out pretty quick that they had you and your brother Rick, you know, going on there, who would figure out that game very quickly.
Yes, we were little monsters before we became gigantic monsters.
Yeah, and determine the best way to harm those around you with it. Oh, man. I can imagine there were several conversations that were like, oh, my God, we've created not one, but two monsters.
What have we done? The two that we made are the worst, and the two we adopted are the one in between those two and the girl. Turns out my parents apparently are Kang and Kodos from the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror episode.
Apparently, in this scenario, yeah. This has been Johannes makes his siblings angry with him.
And no one else knows what's going on.
For those not in the know, I'll as a longtime observer of the Stauffer clan, I'll fill you in. There are four children, two of whom have one kind of personality, and two of whom have a different kind of personality.
And a fifth one who is invisible and mute.
I've never met that one.
You have.
Is
you're
that...
just insensitive.
Oh. Sorry, fifth Stauffer child. I feel very bad now.
His name is Erica.
I respect his choices.
Wasn't his choice.
Oh.
I mean, you can respect his choices, but you won't know what they are because he's invisible and mute.
Does he know sign language?
Yes, probably. I don't know.
How do you know when you're, when like he's on a couch and you shouldn't sit on him?
Look for the depression, just kind of the, you know.
What if the couch is on Zoloft?
Then you're out of luck.
Oh.
So we have very little time left to actually talk about casino games.
Should we just bump it to next week?
No, we can do it.
You think?
I don't know how much we have to say. And sure. If it goes long, turns out I don't care all that much.
Fair enough. Okay, so casino games, you know, obviously a game like poker is a game. Like there's obvious game design elements there. You've got a hand of cards. You've got some hidden information going on. You're making some intelligent choices.
That you can use cards or dice.
Yeah. That there's not too much to say there, really.
Yep.
It's a game like any other game. There's just a betting element to it. I think the betting element is interesting because it adds an element of strategy to what's otherwise not an interesting game.
Yeah.
In that you can use it to prod your opponents to do things they might not otherwise do.
I've never found card games in general interesting. Mm-hmm. I know that's a problem for me because growing up in Michigan, I should think that euchre is the greatest thing ever invented.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, I've never actually even learned how to play it. It might be great. I might enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I've just never found playing card games interesting. I should probably revisit them because as a design exercise, they're actually pretty interesting to make a bunch of different reasonably engaging, like stand the test of time style games mm-hmm. out of the same set of 52 cards is
right.
pretty intriguing. But I've never gotten all that much into them. I think the most I've done is like blackjack and poker built into like a Mario DS
sure.
game.
Euchre's pretty good, but it depends a lot on the group you're with. Like it's yeah. one of those games where if you and your if you are paired with a partner who's vastly different in skill from you, you're not going to have a great time because you're mm-hmm. not going to be able to work well together.
Sure.
And even if you and your partner work well together, if you're paired with players who are another team that's radically off your skill level, it's not going to be that great.
If you're listening from outside of Michigan, euchre is spelled E-U-C-H-R-E. Look it up.
Yeah, good luck having guessed that without a prompt. But it's pretty fun, but it definitely benefits from having, if not a steady playgroup, a playgroup that's all on the same page, relatively.
Sure.
A lot of card games are like that, though.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to be the little fish at the poker table.
Right.
Poker isn't that fun anyway. I've played it. It's not that great. I lost $5.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons we don't really gamble, because like I don't want to play. I play board games for fun and enjoyment, and like nothing sucks the life out of a night more than being like, oh, now.
Not only did I lose, I lost actual money that I need to live.
Yeah, and like hopefully I'm smart enough not to bring that actual money that I need to live, and just like only bring extra money that I can afford to spend on toys and amusements.
Sure,
but that's a pretty short-lived amusement.
Yeah. So the reason this came up is, as Tom mentioned, I was in Canada
mm-hmm.
and my wife dragged me to a casino. Turns out that Niagara Falls is like an incidental miracle of nature surrounded by casinos, mm-hmm. which are the real reason to go there, apparently. And we went into one for reasons that are still unclear to me. And we saw a pretty cool fountain that made the whole lobby of the casino look like we were in Rapture from the BioShock games. And that was the best thing that happened in that building.
Mm-hmm.
And then we entered like what appeared to be roughly 100 acres of blinking, mm-hmm. screaming slot machines
mm-hmm.
and sad people.
Yeah, it's unbelievable to me how much a casino slot machine floor becomes just a monument to human misery.
Yeah.
Just for those that haven't been, picture an endless sea of blinking fluorescent lights out of sync with one another and electronic like MIDI sounds from like early 90s Nintendo games. Then in front of roughly maybe a third to two thirds of the slot machines, because you can't fill the space, certainly.
Right.
Plant an ancient person, just a decrepit, withered husk of a human being. Gender of your choice, put a cigarette in one hand and a beer in the other, and just have them mash a button for eternity. That's a casino. That's what you're up against.
Actually, I saw additional depression in
really?
That.
Did you see a neglected child?
Well, I didn't notice one. They were probably they were probably there.
Or implied.
There were quite a few of the elderly types there, mm-hmm. as described, but there were a shocking, frightening number of, like, people, if not our age, pretty close,
mm-hmm.
like mid-30s. And not even making the effort to button mash, most of the machines had this max bet button that was like, if you put in $10, we'll just spin it until $10 is gone,
mm-hmm.
just sitting, not really looking or interacting, questionably breathing.
Sure.
So that was worse than just like automatons mashing buttons.
Mm-hmm.
But what I noticed, if luck is a stat, mine is quite low. And I knew this already, but it was made abundantly clear by the few times I actually tried to play. Joan and I put $20 into a machine to get 24 and some change Canadian out of a machine,
mm-hmm.
and put that into other different machines, which just ate it.
And it's just gone now.
And the first one we went to, I was like, none of this looks interesting, but at least that one says Jurassic Park on it. And I spent about 3 minutes going, hello, John. Hello, John. Hello, John.
Mm-hmm.
To the guy in, attempting, worse than I did, actually, to do a John Attenborough accent to narrate.
Mm-hmm.
John, not John. John Attenborough.
Richard.
Richard Attenborough. That was the fun part. And then it was just downhill from there.
Mm-hmm.
Lost all of the money that I put into the Jurassic Park machine before any chance to even engage in a game other than mashing a button happened.
Mm-hmm.
Joan got some stuff to work, and then we went to a different machine. Went to one with a chicken on it or something. Doesn't matter. Got to something ostensibly a game where it was like, there are 9 chicken eggs. Pick one, and like it's not a chicken for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a cow or a sheep or a horse, and they're worth different amounts of credits. And then you pick one, and then the fox comes and steals one. And then you pick one, and the fox steals one. And you have to just try to get... No, there's an illusion of choice there.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's all computerized, there's nothing to say that an algorithm isn't changing what any of those eggs is anyway.
Sure.
In a place designed to cheat you out of your money.
Mm-hmm.
And then, eventually, I think we ended up like $4 Canadian up. And I was like, I don't want to be here anymore. But every time I tried something, there was one machine I tried where I won like enough credits to come out like 30 cents on top,
mm-hmm.
of where I started. And then we cashed out and left. And it was pretty much miserable.
Yeah, it's not fun. But it's interesting because it strips all of the decision points out of games. Like,
yeah.
There's no choice going on there. It's just you press the button again or not. That's the only decision you've got.
Yeah.
But it still somehow maintains that dopamine cycle we've talked about before, where you have the anticipation of hitting the button again, and you have that rush you get from pressing it, and then it immediately sets you up to anticipate it again as it rotates, you know? Because it doesn't spin for very long.
Right.
And so very quickly you're cycled back to the beginning of it, and that is kind of the hook, really.
Yeah.
It removes a big source of a part of the cycle that board games hit, the planning, the thinking, here's what my move is going to be. But it gets around losing that by just pairing the cycle down to that quick turnover at the beginning.
That's
the villainry of it.
If any of you have had, played a video game that has a casino or a slot machine element in it, or had like a pocket Pikachu or one of those little, Pokemon had a lot of, there was a casino in, mm-hmm. in the originals. And probably in some of the newer games, the little like Pikachu digital pet things,
mm-hmm.
have like a you got points for walking. It had like a little clicker thing in it to count your steps, and mm-hmm. then you could spend those volts or whatever they called them on what was it, like food or gifts.
I don't even remember.
There was a little slot machine in it, and it had a little bit of agency because you could like if you pressed a button, you could like stop the spinner sooner. Mm-hmm. So you felt like you had some agency. If whether or not you actually did, I don't know. But whatever the case, you couldn't do that. So as long as those spins take in a video game, is probably 10 times longer than an actual spin takes,
mm-hmm.
in a casino slot machine, at least today. Because going back to the dopamine cycle, there's got to be like a half-life for dopamine,
mm-hmm.
for how long it's going to keep you. So if you lose 20 times in a row, there's got to be a point where there's no more, like your reward circuit's not going off because you're not getting anything good and you're just like, screw this, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to make it fast. Bang, 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 bang. You have to throw wins in there. Mm-hmm. I'm sure now that they're all computerized, there's got to be algorithms being like, do a win. There's also, the number on top on a lot of the machines that's like, this is how much it has, because a slot machine supposedly, a like standard original style slot machine, the more it doesn't pay out, the more it will pay out when it does.
Mm-hmm.
There was this one in one of the original casinos, or one of the oldest casinos at any rate, in Vegas, that didn't pay out for decades. And it finally paid out, I think, in like 2014. But it had literally never paid out before. And so the jackpot for this slot machine just kept going up and up and up and up. And mm-hmm. it was one of the original, like, big lever mechanical slot machines. And so people would line up to put their coins in and play it, because it meant that the more it doesn't pay out, the more it will when it finally does. That kind of keeps you coming back.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're looking at the gamified ones that are just like, oh, you lost, that doesn't help you at all. It just means you lost. You have to make the time between spin and payout or non-payout super fast to
right.
keep the... And we've never really talked about this, and I don't think Uwe really talked about it in the dopamine cycle, but the, like, what keeps you coming back when your dopamine cycle doesn't pay off?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's because you're not getting the dopamine payoff when it comes back and it's like you lose, mm-hmm. right? So it's got to be the, and you won, even if it's a tiny amount. That has to happen frequently enough to
yeah.
keep you hitting the button or pulling the crank.
Or in a board game terms, making a plan for your next move.
Yeah.
If your plans go awry and you're not able to execute them, you've got to be able to start a new plan quick enough to begin ramping up to your next move after that.
Yeah.
So that the disappointment doesn't counterbalance it to the point where you don't want to play anymore.
I'd be interested in what, like, actually physiologically the average half-life of dopamine in a person's system is.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at board games, the turns are much, much longer. And you do have that agency, whether you're tricking yourself or not, the ability to make changes that say, this is going to... I can make plans. I can do this. I can do that to, you know, gain ground in an area of control, to get more coins, to whatever it is that I'm supposed mm-hmm. to do in this game. And so you can plan ahead and you can say, okay, I'm going to do it different this time to do better on my next turn, and that's going to keep me going. And you've got a longer dopamine cycle, but when you shorten up the dopamine cycle as much as it is on a slot machine, at least mm-hmm. the ones that I saw, I feel like there's got to be something else at play keeping you mm-hmm. coming back and mashing that button with loss after loss after loss after loss.
Mm-hmm. I think the fact that it's real money probably plays into it. The
like, I need to make up what I've lost. I really yeah. actually need to make
well, yeah.
up what I've lost.
Yeah, the actual physicality of it and the fact that it has a real tangible impact.
Sure.
You know, you can get the same general effect if you made one and just use tokens.
Yeah.
Casino and just use tokens instead of that. You get a similar idea, but the reality of it, I think, impacts something. Two, it helps too that the slot machine is in a controlled environment too of mm-hmm. the casino. You know, a board game is played in somebody's kitchen or in a bar or at a game store or wherever, so you can't control the player's inputs. Otherwise, that the slot machines are set up in a way that pushes the player's attention toward them and makes them lose track of time. You know, I don't know how the casino there was like, but most of them, they don't have windows. They
yeah.
don't have clocks.
That's how it was.
You know, the carpeting is in a chaotic pattern, so it's hard to tell it away from, you know, the machines themselves.
Uh-huh.
The blinking lights are a sea around you, and by the time you get to the machine, your peripheral vision is all casino. You can't see the door, for instance.
Right.
They keep giving you cigarettes and booze, theoretically.
Yeah, they did. They didn't do that there.
It's weird.
Like, I've always thought, like, and maybe we just weren't there for long enough or didn't look for it or what, and we just had dinner and a bottle of wine, but... like, I was like, I've always thought, I don't want to gamble, but I could tolerate a casino for a while, especially if there's some crap hole like Vegas where it's hot outside mm-hmm. and I don't want to be there, where it's like, I'm in air conditioning, there's a buffet, and there's free mm-hmm. booze.
I think a casino could be fun for those reasons, and if you found a game that wasn't a slot machine that was fun to play, like craps or poker, if you found a given table game engaging
yeah.
enough, because I could see... even though you were going to lose money on it, because that's how a casino works.
Right.
If you treat the money you bring to it as an entry fee to stand
yeah,
around...
yeah, as money that you're paying.
Yeah. To stand around with a bunch of other people interested in the game and laugh and have a good time and maybe
yeah.
come out ahead if you're lucky. That could be engaging. I've never found a table game that I find entertaining enough to bother with it.
Yeah.
And I've never wanted to have that kind of disposable that income that I wanted to dispose of that way.
Sure. Me neither. I've always imagined casinos, because like I said, this is the first time I've ever been in one.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always imagined it's like, it's all, because this is what you see in the movies, is like, it's all poker tables and craps, yeah, and things that it's a lot of probability, but there's a degree of skill and of at least calculating the probability,
right,
in what you're doing. And then like, maybe there's a sad little corner of slot machines.
But yeah,
this was like, seriously, like I said, 100 acres, and that was clearly hyperbole. This was probably an indoor acre,
mm-hmm,
at least.
Of slots. Yeah.
Of slots. And I saw signs for table games, but I never saw one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it depends on the kind of clientele the casino is getting, too. Like, there's no point in running paying a dealer to run a poker game for people bringing in, you know, their pension checks,
right,
to waste away. That's just suck them out through a slot machine.
Yeah.
You got to have rollers big enough to make it worth your while to have that dealer, and to have the security you want to keep an eye on them.
Yeah.
And to keep them full of free drinks.
Yeah. Yeah, so like, we didn't get any free drinks. I saw one drink card, and all they had was coffee and canned juice.
I mean, a place like Niagara Falls or where I've been to casinos in Marquette, I mean, those places aren't casinos in the sense like you would see in a Bond movie.
Yeah.
They're just places to suck disposable income out of sad people, really.
Yeah.
And so, in Marquette's case, out of college students who were like, I want to go to the casino. That'll
still
be fun.
Still sad people, just also college students.
Yeah.
So we don't need to drag this out much further. We're a little over our time already. But what I did notice is that even in the games that had supposedly games, in the slot machines at, mm-hmm, any rate, there weren't really games. There was no agency.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And those ones didn't even have the like ticker up top that was like, here's how much this one could pay out because it hasn't paid out yet. They were just like, engage in. I almost wonder if it's like, I never got into Angry Birds.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, any game that becomes like a viral, you know, cross the country or global phenomenon on mobile gaming,
mm-hmm,
I've never found interesting. Angry Birds, like Bejeweled.
Mm-hmm.
Snood way early on, like I've never cared.
Sure.
Because there's just it's like the point at which skill allows you to win and to be good at it is so far removed from the point at which just the random chance generated by the computer, mm-hmm, could totally ruin your ability to win, even if you somehow had a 100% accuracy rate or whatever it is.
Right.
It wasn't interesting. And even if the content, which is generally just fluff, mm-hmm, and pointless to cover up a pretty basic game, even if that were interesting, the game design element is so poor that I just don't care.
Yeah.
But it seems to engage a large number of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I wonder, first of all, why? Second of all, is there a way to design a board game that does that so we can make a ton of money and then just rest on that pile of cash?
I don't think a board game is fast
enough. Yeah, you're probably right.
I don't think it turns over the dopamine cycle fast enough to keep a person hooked.
Yeah, but it must. It must, right? And so a board game's a little slower. But what is turning over the dopamine cycle in Snood? In Bejeweled, in these games that don't do anything.
Well, I mean, with Bejeweled, the cycle is plan an action, anticipate the action, resolve the action. Your cycle for there is as quick as the screen refreshes, you know, the jewels fall down.
Yeah.
Planning the action is finding your next triple, your next three jewels you can move into a line.
Right.
Anticipating is built in there, and then executing is actually clicking and doing it. That's pretty fast.
Yeah, I guess.
And so you're quick, and then you immediately start it over again. It clicks over very quickly, and then as the levels end, you get these breathers in it. But same thing with Angry Birds. The planning is the trajectory, and then you get to see if it works, and you get to try again right away.
Yeah, I never found Angry Birds interesting, but I feel like there might actually be a level of skill there.
Yeah,
like, I don't care, but
sure.
I feel like there is some like not quite pool, but similar. You know, mm-hmm, it's simulated physics, but once you get your hang of the physics, you can actually kind of figure out, mm-hmm, how to aim your shot.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I just I wonder, and I don't need an answer unless you have one offhand. But we can kind of close up with this. I wonder if the dopamine cycle is tied into your own cognitive ability to recognize what you actually have control over.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a heady question. Heady?
I believe it's heady.
I believe it's pronounced...
It's headly.
No, I don't know. That's a tough one. We should come back to it in another episode.
Yeah. Well, if you're a doctor or a college student who recently finished their dissertation on addiction...
do something better with your
time. No. Come here. It'll be interesting for other people. Maybe we'll get ratings. Or if you're Uva and you're secretly listening and want to tell us more about the dopamine cycle that we've clearly forgotten too much about since we talked to you about it last year.
We're not smart men.
Please let us know on Twitter at @mildlyalarming.
Let us know on email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
Let us know on website at www.mildlyalarming.com or facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow. You can also listen to us and occasionally sometimes in certain places comment and review. Please review. We like reviews of the 5-star variety on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, and the website. You can listen there too.
Or if you reach under your chair right now, you'll find a syringe full of pure black tar dopamine. Shoot that straight into the thick part of your thigh, and you will see the Billy Goat, and he will take your message to us for you. He's a cool dude.
Meh.
Good night, everybody.
Bye. Hi, I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm Tom.
Gotta say your last name too, buddy. We talked about this.
Oh, I got rid of it. I'm like Socrates now.
Anyway, we at the Tom and Johannes for Kings of America campaign would like to extend a generous one-time-only, except you can do it twice, offer to you.
That offer being that you can give us money.
Turns out that running for president is immensely expensive and can't be funded by what Tom makes by going to restaurants, licking the tips left on the tables, and yelling dibs.
Or what Johannes makes waxing mannequin legs.
That's why we've set up a special fund that you can give money to so that we can buy, I don't know, hats and stuff?
Rubber masks of our own faces.
And it's all tax deductible, probably.
Donate today and I will personally carve your name into something in the White House, like a desk or the eternal tormented soul of Richard Nixon.
And if you happen to be a shadowy oligarch, boy howdy do we have benefits for you.
Wait a second. You didn't say we'd be courting shadowy oligarchs.
Not now, dude.
But you didn't tell me about the shadowy oligarchs. I feel like I should have been told we were begging money off of shadowy oligarchs.
Of course we're begging money off of shadowy oligarchs. You have to beg money off of shadowy oligarchs. Shadowy oligarchs are the ones that have money to beg. The only reason I didn't tell you is because the last time we tried to beg money off of shadowy oligarchs, you ran into the room wearing a superhero mask, leaped onto the table brandishing a giant pair of novelty scissors, cut off all of their ties, and proclaimed yourself Hector, Sword of the Proletariat.
I have no memory of this.
Anyway, give us money, or Donald Trump will be president, and nobody wants that.
He can't even do a proper hand turkey on Thanksgiving.
More like a hand guinea fowl.
Nice.
You wrote that joke. Did you just script in a compliment to your own joke?
Might have.
Nice.
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 Nice.